All right, hello everyone. Hello, Ken. It's been a while since I've been here for I Am That, it feels like. I've been doing an enormous amount of traveling, which began in April with a trip to Ireland, and it seems like I'm only home a few days and I leave again. So, but I'm happy to be here tonight for I Am That. I Am That is one of my favorite books, and I love sharing from it. Tonight, I am starting message. But oh, Ken says last time I was here was May 2. So yeah, that's like a month and a half ago. Long time. Oh, and you got the book, Sita. That's wonderful. Yeah, I love the book. So today I'm beginning message number 11. Which is on page, gosh, page 27, page 27. And I will just begin reading and then we'll see where this conversation goes. So the questioner asks, what do you do when you are asleep? And Nisargadatta Maharaj answers, I am aware of being asleep. The questioner says, is not sleep a state of unconsciousness? And Nisargadatta says, yes, I am aware of being unconscious. And I'll just pause there just to mention that I have heard other spiritual teachers say that when they had their awakening experience, after their awakening experience, they were aware of themselves as they slept. It seems to me like one of the teachers that I've heard mention this is Jan Fraser. So this is not the first time that I have that I've heard this. Continuing on, the questioner says, so again, Nisargadatta said, I'm aware of being unconscious. And the questioner says, and when awake or dreaming? And Nisargadatta says, I am aware of being awake or dreaming. And the questioner says, I do not follow you. What exactly do you mean? Let me make my terms clear. By being asleep, I mean unconscious. By being awake, I mean conscious. By dreaming, I mean conscious of one's mind, but not of the surroundings. Nisargadatta says, it is almost the same for me, yet there seems to be a difference. In each state, you forget the other two, while to me, there is but one state of being, including and transcending the three mental states of waking, dreaming, and sleeping. So what I understand Nisargadatta to say here is that through awakening, he has achieved awareness of awareness, which is beyond what humans think of as consciousness, right? When we are awake in the daytime, we experience what appears to be a real world, and we appear to be a body in this world, and we are aware of ourselves, and we are aware of everything that our senses come into contact with, and that is human consciousness. When we're asleep, in deep sleep, we're not aware of anything. Our human consciousness seems to, what's the opposite of project? Rescind? Is that rescind? Come back into? Our human consciousness seems to come back into our brain or something. It seems to turn off and we seem to be unconscious. And then when we're dreaming, we seem to be in another world, a world that appears real to us. We may even appear to be a body in that world while we're dreaming, but it follows very unusual laws, like I can fly in my dreams. And of course, when we wake up from the dream, we realize that it was not at all true. It was completely mind-made. So three different states: being awake in the world, being asleep in bed, and dreaming in bed. And so what Nisargadatta is saying is he has achieved, or he has awakened to awareness, which is beyond all three of these states. It's beyond the human consciousness, beyond the sleeping unconsciousness, and beyond the dreaming consciousness. And because he is beyond them, or some might say above them, he's aware of all three of those things when they are happening, but his state is unchanging and constant. Again, he says, it is almost the same for me, yet there seems to be a difference. In each state, you forget the other two. While to me, there is but one state of being, including and transcending the three mental states of waking, dreaming, and sleeping, right? Including them. I see the human consciousness, I see the sleeping unconsciousness, and I see the dream consciousness, but I'm looking as if from above, right? I've transcended them. The questioner says, do you see a direction and a purpose in the world? Nisargadatta says, the world is but a reflection of my imagination. Whatever I want to see, I can see. But why should I invent patterns of creation, evolution, and destruction? I do not need them. The world is in me. The world is myself. I am not afraid of it and have no desire to lock it up in a mental picture. So this is an example of Nisargadatta speaking from the absolute. It's interesting because he does occasionally speak where his I or my, right, that those words of identification, I and my, speak from the position of the absolute. So when he says the world is but a reflection of my imagination, he's not referring to the man, of course, Nisargadatta Maharaj. But I don't think this is a minor point, because frequently when I talk to people who primarily study A Course in Miracles, because A Course in Miracles talks about projection and how the world is a projection of the mind. Most often when I talk to students of A Course in Miracles, they will say things like, the world is just a projection of my mind, but you can tell that when they say my or I, they're still referring to the person. They're referring to the body, you know. So like in my case, it would refer to Regina. And it's ridiculous, actually, to think that the world is a projection of Regina's mind. In fact, the Regina person was born, and the Regina person will die. And although the world, as we know it, is limited, it is not as limited as the Regina person. The world in time has a longer life, right? It was born and it will end at some point, but its life probably crosses billions of years. Or Regina might be 65, 75, 85, if she's lucky, 95 years. And in fact, the Regina person is a part of the projection. She's not the projector. She's part of the projection, right? So when we think that the world is a projection of my mind, and the world my, the word my still refers to the person, we're completely confused. That's just all there is to it. In that case, it would be more correct to say I am a projection. If the word I and the word my refers to the person, it would be more correct to say I am a projection than it would be to say the world is a projection of my mind. But Nisargadatta has awakened beyond the projection. And so when Nisargadatta says that the world is a projection of my mind, or his words literally here, the world is but a reflection of my imagination, he's speaking from the universal I, the universal my, which we could call the absolute. And when each and every one of us awaken to our true self, our I and our my is the exact same as his, right? There is no difference. Of course, in Miracles does mention this confusion I'm talking about. It calls it level confusion, right? We are experiencing level confusion when our I or our my points to the body-mind personality. That's a confusion about who or what we are. And Nisargadatta does not experience level confusion. He is very clear that I or my points to the absolute and not to any particular human body-mind personality. So again, he says, the world is but a reflection of my imagination. Whatever I want to see, I can see. And remember, we are all a part of that I. And in fact, we are seeing what the, you know, I want to call it the unconscious consciousness, you know, which sounds crazy, but it's the ignorant aspect of consciousness, the unconscious consciousness, which is caught up in the dream of the world and just believing the dream of the world, right? It wants to continue to see the dream of the world, even though it doesn't like everything it sees. It prefers the dream of the world to nothing. It prefers the dream of the world to nothing. And it definitely thinks that the alternative to the dream of the world is nothing. Therefore, it wants this dream to continue, and therefore the dream does continue, right? So you could say we are seeing what we want to see, even if we don't like it. Again, we prefer the world to nothing, and we think the alternative to the world is nothing. Therefore, we very much want the world with all of its warts and bumps and and lumps and triggers and everything else that comes with it. So the world is but a reflection of my imagination. Whatever I want to see, I can see. And again, the ignorant part of consciousness, the unconscious part of consciousness, wants to see the world. And so it does. But listen to what Nisargadatta says next. But why should I invent patterns of creation, evolution, and destruction? I do not need them. So you see, he, of course, is not speaking from unconscious consciousness or ignorant consciousness. He is speaking from awake and aware consciousness, right? And as that pure awareness, he has no need for the world. And so he says, but why should I invent patterns of creation, evolution, and destruction? I do not need them. Now, it's interesting, before I finish reading this, it's interesting because just a moment ago, He told us that he is aware of the states of being asleep, the state of being awake in the world, and a state of dreaming. Now, of course, in that case, he is referring to a body, right? It's the body that we know of as Nisargadatta, the crazy looking guy. The body of Nisargadatta is awake in the world, sleeps in the world, and dreams in the world, right? And he just told us a moment ago, he says that his state of mind includes the Nisargadatta body sleeping, dreaming, and waking, but it also transcends. So it's as if he experiences the world through the senses of the Nisargadatta body, and yet at the same time, he transcends the Nisargadatta body, which is why he is able to be aware when the Nisargadatta body is sleeping in what we would call unconscious. So he knows that the world is perceived, and yet he's looking at that perception from, for lack of better words, above it, from a position above it, right? And from a position that is consistent and aware of truth, aware of reality. So he says, why should I invent patterns of creation, evolution, and destruction? I do not need them. And then he says, the world is in me, right? So now he's speaking, you know, the world is in me, that position of consistent awareness, that position of constantness, the reality is where he speaks from. But there's an awareness of the perception of the world, and he refers to that awareness of that world as in me. The world is in me. And then he says, the world is myself. Because he's also aware. I'm trying to figure out how to say this. He's also aware that the reality that he is the only isness that there is. The reality that he is the only isness that there is. Therefore, all of the perceptions are in reality that isness. Again, the example that I've often used, and so you all who pay attention to my teachings are very familiar with, if the reality was Play-Doh, and if we made a world out of Play-Doh, you know, we make trees, and we make buildings, and we make people, and we make animals, we make everything out of Play-Doh, you still only have Play-Doh. So if the absolute is life awareness, that life awareness is like the Play-Doh. So all of the world that we perceive as different things, as trees and buildings and people and animals, etc., it's really all the life awareness that he is. So he says both the world in me and also the world is myself. And also, I do not need to invent patterns of creation, evolution, and destruction. In other words, he can see the world as the Play-Doh, or he can see the world as the life awareness. He doesn't need to see it as the temporary images that we see. Now, the Nisargadatta body through the senses, this is quite interesting. The Nisargadatta body through the senses still sees the images. That's how the Nisargadatta body knows the difference between his wife, his children, and a student that has come to the loft. But just like he can see the Nisargadatta body sleeping, dreaming, and waking, He can see the world that the Nisargadatta body sees, and yet, at the same time, he's above it or beyond it, simultaneously, and therefore aware of the reality in spite of the images that are seen with the body. The world is in me, and the world is myself. I am not afraid of it and have no desire to lock it up in a mental picture. You know, would the Play-Doh have any reason to be afraid of a Play-Doh tiger? Right? Does life awareness have any need to be aware of any of the apparent destructive things that can happen in a life, in a quote, life awareness world? You know, a tiger can destroy a man. An earthquake can destroy a man. A flood can destroy a man. But life awareness cannot destroy life awareness. And so from the perspective of life awareness, which is Nisargadatta's perspective, there is nothing to fear. From the perspective of a man or a woman who believes he is a man or a woman, well, it appears there is something to fear, because again, a man or a woman can be destroyed. But again, that's the level confusion, and that's what this awakening process is all about. It's awakening like Nisargadatta has, so that we do not see ourselves as a man or a woman who can be destroyed, but we see ourselves genuinely, not just intellectually, genuinely as life awareness. We know ourselves as life awareness, which cannot be destroyed. The questioner then says, coming back to sleep, do you dream? And Nisargadatta says, of course. So see how Nisargadatta is able to speak from the absolute, and he's able to speak about the Nisargadatta human. You know, because he's able to observe every part of the Nisargadatta human's experience, and yet he observes it from a position above, from a position that outlasts the temporary Nisargadatta human, from the position of life awareness, or the position of the absolute. You know, Nisargadatta Maharaj, you know, this beingness that is speaking and answering these questions as Nisargadatta Maharaj, it knows that Nisargadatta Maharaj body and its experiences in an extremely personal way. You know, it knows his bowel movements, for example. I mentioned this in Gentle Healing the other night when sharing from Rupert Spira, I think last night, seems like a year ago. I've been through so, you know, gone through so many different things today. Last night seems like a year ago. But I mentioned that each and every one of us has consciousness, because we are all consciousness. Each and every one of us has consciousness, gets to experience intimately one temporary body-mind personality. I mentioned that when I had that experience of being an apple, when my awareness shifted into an apple, I got to know what an apple's experience is like. And in fact, last night in Rupert Spira, I read something about consciousness is the knower, and that you come to know, consciousness comes to know something by being it. And remember, we are all the same consciousness. We make the mistake of perceiving ourselves as different consciousnesses, but that's not true. Consciousnesses, I doubt that's even a word. So it would be silly that we perceive ourselves as different consciousnesses. Right? It's one consciousness. And the one consciousness is knowing many people, many animals, many plants, many inanimate objects. It's knowing land, earth, it's knowing fire, it's knowing water, right? It's knowing all of this by being it, right? The play gets to know the experience of the image that it's formed into. And so each one of us as consciousness, although we have forgotten we are consciousness, each one of us as consciousness knows a particular body mind personality by being it or appearing to be it. Again, we know, you know, I know Regina's bowel movements. And each of you know the bowel movements of a particular character. And so Nisargadatta, who again has awakened from the misperception that he's that body mind personality, right? He speaks from the absolute. And yet, as long as this body mind is personality continues to live, he still also simultaneously has that intimate experience of knowing that particular body mind personality. And so he can answer questions as the absolute, and he can answer questions about the Nisargadatta experience. So again, the question is, coming back to sleep, do you dream? And he knows the you in this sentence, not the absolute, so he doesn't answer this question as the absolute. He knows the you and is referring to you, meaning you, you know, this body, mind, personality sitting in front of me that I call Sri Nisargadatta. Coming back to sleep, do you dream? And Nisargadatta just simply answers, of course. And the questioner says, what are your dreams? And he says, echoes of the waking state. Echoes of the waking state. You know, and if you really pay attention to your dreams, one thing that has happened for me is that when I dream and when I wake up and I look at a dream, I can tell where the different puzzle pieces came from. You know, like I can tell this part of the dream came from this conversation that I had with Jacqueline earlier today. This part of the dream, you know, came from a TV show that I saw before I went to the bed. This part of the dream came from some thoughts I was having today about, you know, the Italy pilgrimage. And all these different pieces got put together and created something different, which was a dream. But it's just as he says, the dreams are just echoes of the waking state. And then the man says, and your deep sleep. And Nisargadatta says, the brain consciousness is suspended. The brain consciousness, I called that the human consciousness earlier. The brain consciousness is suspended. He says, the questioner says, are you then unconscious? And Nisargadatta says, unconscious of my surroundings? Yes. So when Nisargadatta is watching the body-mind sleep or is being aware of the body-mind sleep, it's not as if he's having an out-of-body experience hovering above the body, watching it sleep in the bed, because he's saying here that he is unconscious of the surroundings. It's more that he's aware of the unconsciousness. He's aware of the unconscious state, just like we are aware of the waking state and we are aware of the dreaming state. He is also aware of the unconscious state. The questioner says, not quite unconscious, question mark. And Nisargadatta says, I remain aware that I am unconscious, which of course is, you know, what we just talked about. The questioner says, you use the words aware and conscious. Are they not the same? And that's kind of an interesting question, and I'll look at Ms. Argadotta's answer in a moment. But what's really interesting is that if you get very literal about it and you look it up in the dictionary, you will find that awareness and consciousness, or aware and conscious, have the same meanings to a degree, to a large degree. Mind also has some of those same meanings. And this again is why different spiritual teachers use the words in different ways. It's not because they have different understandings. It's just that the words really can be used. You know, I could refer to human consciousness and divine awareness, or I could refer to human awareness and divine consciousness. It really doesn't matter. So sometimes people get confused because those words are so interchangeable. And again, another word that is interchangeable is mind. You know, like mind can refer to the thinking mind, but mind can also refer to divine consciousness or divine awareness. So since these three words are so interchangeable, they get very, very confusing for people. But I'm sure Nisargadatta will answer in the way he uses the words. So let's just have a look at what his answer is to this particular question. He says, awareness is primordial. It is the original state, the beginningless, endless, uncaused, unsupported, without parts, without change. So he's using the word awareness to refer to the absolute. He says consciousness is on contact, a reflection against a surface, a state of duality. So that would refer to human consciousness that we experience in the waking state and that we imagine we experience in the dreaming state. He says there can be no consciousness without awareness, but there can be awareness without consciousness, as in deep sleep. Awareness is absolute, and as he said before, primordial, but consciousness is relative to its content. Consciousness is always of something. So those of you who know my teaching of the first principle of God and the second principle of God, awareness then would be the first principle of God. Consciousness was born with the second principle of God. I often refer to that as the first subject, right? And then, of course, out of that, once there was a subject, there needed to be something to be conscious of, which created the third principle of God, the creative principle. And through the third principle of God, all of manifestation was created. So now you have consciousness that is conscious of. But awareness is prior to all of that, right? Awareness is primordial. Awareness is prior to subject and prior to object. So again, he says awareness is absolute, but consciousness is relative to its content. Consciousness is always of something. He says consciousness is partial and changeful. So here I really feel he's referring more to what I call subject-object consciousness or human consciousness. It appears to be partial. I have to contemplate what he means by changeful, but I understand the partial. Because again, when we go to sleep, we become unconscious. If we faint or pass out, we become unconscious. If we are put under for surgery, you know, we become unconscious. So our consciousness at this level appears to be partial. It comes and goes. And maybe this is also what he means by changeful. I'm not quite as certain what he means by changeful, because although I experience consciousness coming and going, unless that is the change, and that may be what he means, that coming and going is a change, and I agree that it is. So if that's what he means by changeful, then I see what he means. But I do not experience a change in it while it's present, right? I do experience it coming and going. but I do not experience a change in human consciousness while it's present. It's always the same. I experience changes in emotions, changes in thoughts, changes in the way the body feels, but I do not experience a change in consciousness other than coming and going. Like, I'm definitely unconscious in surgery, unconscious in sleep. And fortunately, I don't pass out very often, but I know that if I do pass out, that again is an experience of unconscious. So consciousness is partial and changeful. Awareness is total, changeless, calm, and silent. It is the common matrix of every experience. And because it is the common matrix of every experience, when you awaken to awareness, which again is constant, right? It doesn't come and go like human consciousness appears to. Then when you awaken to awareness, you are aware, even as the human appears to go unconscious. Right? The question says, how does one go beyond consciousness into awareness? That's a good question, don't you think? How does one go beyond consciousness into awareness? Nisargadatta says, since it is awareness that makes consciousness possible, there is awareness in every state of consciousness. Therefore, the very consciousness of being conscious is already a movement in awareness. Interest in your stream of consciousness takes you to awareness. It is not a new state. It is at once recognized as the original basic existence, which is life itself, and also love, joy. And I often call it life awareness, a hyphenated word, because it is life and awareness as one, not as two, right? As one, it's life awareness. So, and he's saying that it's life itself, and I agree with that. What he is also saying here, which again, if you're in gentle healing, we have learned and we practice. You know, the question was, how does one go beyond consciousness into awareness? His answer is, be conscious of consciousness. Have interest in your consciousness, and that takes you to awareness. And this is the practice that we have learned. We call it awareness, watching awareness, meditation. And that's exactly what Nisargadatta is recommending here. So you take time to pay attention to your consciousness. And he says that takes you to awareness. That takes you beyond the consciousness that seems to come and go, to the awareness that is beyond the consciousness that seems to come and go. And again, you know when you have awakened to that awareness, because then you are aware of the consciousness that comes and goes, both when it's conscious and when it's unconscious. And it's nice because the mind, I think, likes to lie to many people and say, you know, I'm awake. But it should be pretty easy to see, am I aware when I'm unconscious? Or does my consciousness still seem to come and go? If my consciousness still seems to come and go, then I am not yet awake to awareness. It's that simple. Because awareness is primordial and first, and it's aware of consciousness in all three of its states, sleeping, dreaming, and waking. I'll read Nisargadatta's answer again. Since it is awareness that makes consciousness possible, there is awareness in every state of consciousness. Therefore, the very consciousness of being conscious is already a movement in awareness. Interest in your stream of consciousness takes you to awareness. Interest in your stream of consciousness takes you to awareness. It is not a new state. It is at once recognized as the original basic existence, which is life itself and also love and joy. The questioner says, since reality is with us all the time, what does self-realization consist of? And Nisargadatta says, realization is but the opposite of ignorance. To take the world as real and one's self as unreal is ignorance, the cause of sorrow. To know the self as the only reality and all else as temporal and transient is freedom, peace, and joy. It is all very simple. Instead of seeing things as imagined, learn to see them as they are. When you can see everything as it is, you will also see yourself as you are. It is like cleaning a mirror. The same mirror that shows you the world as it is will also show you your own face. The thought, I am, is the polishing cloth. Use it. So a lot of really good advice, a lot of really good pointers in this paragraph. So this is the last paragraph of the message. So let's go back and look at this paragraph a little at a time and really digest what Nisargadatta is saying. Again, the question was, what does self-realization consist of? And the answer, realization is but the opposite of ignorance. And again, it's rather funny because if we didn't all know how synchronicity works, you know, you might think that I read this message in advance of last night's gentle healing so that I could say it last night and then today say, that's just like what I said last night. Of course, that didn't happen. I didn't read this message at all until reading it just now with you. But that is what I said last night. And it's also what I said. It was a primary teaching that I kept referring back to all weekend in Pennsylvania. So it's something that is really, really with me. I said that the word ignorance is one of the most important spiritual words. The word ignorance is one of the most important spiritual words because the word ignorance tells us exactly what the problem is. And if we know what the problem is, we know what the solution is. And the part of the word ignorance that tells us what the problem is the first part where it says ignore, right? Ignorance is based on ignore. What are we ignoring? Our true self. We ignore our true self by focusing on our thoughts, by focusing on our body personality, and by focusing on the world or the images, I'll call them. So we give all of our attention to thoughts, body, personality, world. And when we give all of our attention to thoughts, body, personality, world, we are ignoring consciousness and therefore ignoring awareness. And that ignoring of consciousness, that ignoring of awareness, is the problem, which Nisargadatta refers to as the cause of all suffering. And so since the ignore is the problem, the answer then, the solution, is to reverse that by not ignoring anymore, which again takes us back to awareness, watching, awareness, meditation. By putting time in every day to just pay attention solely to consciousness without interest in thoughts, without interest in body, personality, without interest in world, we are literally reversing ignorance. And when ignorance is reversed, that is self-realization. And we reawaken to ourself as awareness. Instead of thinking that we're the body, mind, personality that we tend to keep our attention with. So again, the question is, what does self-realization consist of? Nisargadatta says, realization is but the opposite of ignorance. To take the world as real and one's self as unreal is ignorance, the cause of sorrow. So again, when we believe that the world is reality and we pay no attention to our consciousness or our awareness as our reality, as our self, that is the cause of all sorrow. Right? We look, you know, lately, one thing that many people have been very upset about is what's happening on the borders here in the U.S., where people are coming into the U.S., they came to the U.S. to seek asylum from violent nations in the South. And since they're coming across the borders at places that are not official points of entry for asylum seekers, they have been considered criminals. They have been considered coming into the nation illegally. They have been considered criminals. Criminals, of course, are arrested and put in detention, jail, or prison. Children cannot be put in detention by our law. And so the children that are traveling with them have been taken from them and put in what are being called camps, which is kind of funny because it still looks like detention to me. But let's not get into that. Are being put into camps and separated from their parents. So, or hospitals in some cases, I understand. So a lot of people have been very, very upset about this. But what Nisargadatta is saying is that we are ignoring the reality and we're suffering because of a temporary manifestation. Even this situation, which it seems to be, you know, taking the attention of a lot of people in us right now, had a beginning and will have an end. And yet look how riled up everybody is getting while it's occurring, right? And suffering, getting angry. You know, when I was in Pennsylvania this weekend, some of the people that were in the group at the retreat that I was leading, very upset, very angry, in some cases even filled with what I would call hate. Suffering because they're paying attention to a temporary manifestation in the world that had a beginning and will most definitely have an ending, instead of paying attention to the truth, to the true self, to the awareness that lasts, that is constant while everything else comes and goes. Giving all of that attention to the world as if it is real and no attention to the reality is the cause of all suffering. And you can see it if you open your eyes and look. So he says to take the world as real and one's self as unreal is ignorance, or ignoring, right? The cause of sorrow. To know the self as the only reality and all else as temporal and transient is freedom, peace, and joy. You know, what if you look at the situation at the border and know in your heart and in every cell of your being that just as it began, it will end. Would you get upset about it? But for this, you know, couple of months that this thing is occurring, people aren't saying just as it began, it will end. They're saying this is unfair, this shouldn't be happening. Or they're on the other side saying this is the only way we're going to take our nation back. We got to quit letting people just pour into the country. And everybody's taking a side. Everybody's arguing. Nobody's standing up and saying this is a transient situation. Just as it began, it will end. The reality is I am. Right? Imagine that you are one of the people caught up in this. Imagine that you are at the border and you have just been detained, right? Imprisoned as a criminal because you happened to cross over in the wrong place. And imagine that you have the attitude, this is temporal. Just as this began, this will end. I am constant. I am constant. You know, you could be the one that it appears to be happening to, and be much more peaceful, much more joyous, feel much more free, even though you are detained, than those who are watching it on the television and have nothing to do with it, who are forgetting the truth. Whether we suffer or don't suffer has nothing to do with the world. It has everything to do with what we see as reality. If I see the world as real, I will suffer. If I see the world as temporal, transient, always changing, and myself as the constant reality, then I experience freedom, peace, joy, even if I am the one that is detained. To know the self as the only reality and all else as temporal and transient is freedom, peace, and joy. It is all very simple. When you can see everything as it is, you will also see yourself as you are. When you see all of the images, the entire projection, as transient and changing, and you notice yourself as that which is constant, you know the truth. He says it is like cleaning a mirror. The same mirror that shows you the world as it is will also show you your own face, right? When you really know the difference between what's changing and what's constant, then you have clarity. And how do you know the constant? By being aware of the change. The changing is happening within the constant. It becomes very easy to see that if you pay attention to consciousness. The consciousness does not change. The awareness does not change. But everything within it does all of the time. And nothing within it is constant at all. When you can see everything as it is, you will also see yourself as you are. It is like cleaning a mirror. The same mirror that shows you the world as it is will also show you your own face. And then he says, the thought I am is the polishing cloth. In other words, being aware of your constancy is the polishing cloth. There's a game that I used to really enjoy playing until I didn't need to play it anymore. But the game was, I would call it What Doesn't Change. So I would notice, for example, when I was having a hot flash, and I would notice how the body really changed during a hot flash. And then I would ask, but what doesn't change? What is the same now why this hot flash is happening as it was prior to the hot flash? Or if the body didn't feel well, like if I got a headache, I would say, what is the same now prior to the headache and now that there is the headache is the same? Or if I was hungry, what is the same now that I'm hungry as when I wasn't hungry? or sleepy. What is the same now, witnessing this sleepiness that was here when I was energetic? And I just kept paying attention to the consciousness that doesn't change while everything within it changed. That is the I am. That is the thought I am. It's just doing it in a different way, because I am that which doesn't change. And that, he says, is the polishing cloth. By noticing the difference between what changes and what doesn't change, we become aware of ourself. You notice the world as it is, which is transient and changing, and you come to know yourself as you are, unchanging, and always here. So again, he says, the thought I am is the polishing cloth. And then he says, use it. And that's the end of the message. Use it, right? And it's nice that we had this little conversation, him and this questioner, but it doesn't do any good if we just have a conversation and you walk away and all you do is talk about the conversation, talk about the time you got to meet the great Nisargadatta Maharaj, and this is what he said to me. That's worthless. Practice noticing your constancy. Practice awareness watching awareness. Practice noticing that everything in the world is transient. Everything that has a beginning has an end. Pay attention to these simple, simple things, and you will come to know yourself. So that is the end of this particular message. And Ken, we can just call the message, we can just call the teaching awareness and consciousness. That was actually the name of the message, but I think that's a good name for the teaching as well. Awareness and consciousness. That will be the title. And I think that is all that I have to share. So even though it's a couple minutes early, Ken, I hope you're there. I always dislike letting go of the mic a little early, because you never know if the admin ran to go to the bathroom or something. Okay, good, he's there. All right then, Ken, I'm going to go ahead and let go of the mic just a little bit early, because I am done. Bye.